All right. So, chapter 16, Rise of David. So, this is entering the last section of the book of 1 Samuel. And the main kind of point of this last section is God prepares the true king. That's the main point here. God prepares the true king. And so this section will show that not only is David the right king, in contrast to Saul that we saw before, but also God is going to refine him to make him the right king. And so, yeah, as you'll see, David does not ascend to the throne right away. There is this kind of preparing that God is going to do, to where eventually, like when we get to 2 Samuel, that's when David actually takes the throne, okay? And so 1 Samuel, the end of this is all kind of building up to that kind of climax, but we don't get there quite yet. And so, but we see God preparing him and refining him all along the way is kind of the goal here. And so chapter 16, we see this initial anointing of King David. So David is anointed king. And so you're probably familiar with this chapter as well as some of the other chapters we're going to get here soon. But you know the story. So the Lord sends Samuel to Jesse of Bethlehem to, hey, you're going to anoint one of this guy's sons as the next king. And if you remember how that goes, Jesse brings out his sons, starts like the oldest guy, Eliab, and he brings him out. And what's Samuel's initial thought? Remember? Remember Samuel's initial thought when he sees Eliab? Yeah, this has got to be the guy. And why would he say that? Yeah, he probably looks very impressive, right? He probably looks very impressive of, hey, this looks like a king. And so whether it's he's tall again or good looking, we don't know. But like it's something he's physically impressive. And that's what he sees. And didn't we already see this? Is that what God is looking for? Someone physically impressive? No. We saw that before with Saul. That didn't work out very well. And so, but what is God looking for? He's looking for a man what? After his own heart. And so that's why the Lord tells Samuel, this isn't the guy. Because remember, the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the what? Heart. At the heart. And so remember, this is then being established in this theology of kingship. Of kingship is not about the external, it is about the heart. That's what this is establishing. That is what characterizes a true king, is a heart of obedience, a heart, a man after God's own heart. And so eventually they go through all the sons, and the only one missing is David, who is out with the sheep. And so they call him, bring him in. Samuel anoints him. The Lord indicates, yeah, this is the guy, all that. And at that point, it says the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him and at that time and like kind of continued with him. And again, the rest of the book is going to be God preparing David to take the throne eventually. And so he doesn't take it right away, but he'll get there eventually. And you see all these steps kind of along the way that the Lord is going to use to prepare him for this. And part of this, the end of chapter 16, you see David and Saul's service. And so what you're going to also see, we talked about a contrast between Jonathan and Saul, but you're also going to see a contrast between David and Saul throughout the rest of this book. And one of the first contrasts you see here is as the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David that we just saw in that last section, what happens here is we find out the Spirit of the Lord departs from Saul. So the Spirit of the Lord departs from Saul, and instead there was a harmful spirit that tormented him. That's what it's kind of replaced with here. And if you're going to remember the story, they find out like music helps soothe him. And so they end up bringing this kid that seems to play really mean lyre or something, whatever he can do. And that's David, okay? And so we see David entering the service of Saul. So it's putting him in this kind of royal area, right? He's getting around these, the royalty, all that. But it's interesting that at the beginning, what's Saul's reaction to him? Yeah, he loves him. He even talks about like, and Saul loved him. Like everyone liked him, and even Saul loves him and everything. But as we'll see, that will quickly erode. Okay, that will quickly erode as Saul becomes more and more jealous of David But at this point, again, it starts out okay. But again, you see those steps that God is bringing now David to interact with the royalty and all this stuff, okay? And that takes us into chapter 17, the most kind of well-known passage of 1 Samuel, if not one of the most well-knowns of Scripture, which is the story of David and Goliath. So David and Goliath. All right. And so you have here, once again, Israel is at war with the Philistines. And you see them kind of draw up their camps on different sides of, if you remember, like we call like the Shephelah, that kind of buffer zone between the coastal plain where the Philistines dwelt and the hill country where the Israelites dwelt in Israel. So they're there in the Shephelah, that buffer zone. And they kind of gather there for battle. But in this case, they don't do like a normal battle. Remember, the Philistines kind of bring out their champion Goliath, and they kind of proclaim that Israel bring out their champion and like, hey, instead of like us fighting an all-out war with a lot of death, all this stuff, let's just have kind of mano-a-mano, one guy on one guy, and like whoever wins, your champion, whoever wins, the losing team will kind of surrender and just be servants of the winning team. So that's kind of the plan that's going on here. But what's the issue with this? Yeah, Goliath's huge, right? It's like, this isn't a fair battle. And there's different speculations of how tall he actually is, right? If you take the Hebrew text is what it is, they put him somewhere around 9 foot 9 inches. So massive. He's a massive guy. And so is anyone on Israel's sides lining up against him? No. They're not like, I got it. Like, no, that guy's huge. But if you think about it, what's kind of ironic about this? Because who else do we know who is tall? Yeah, Saul, right? He's the tallest guy in Israel. Probably not as tall as Goliath, but he's the tallest, okay? And so who would have been like the most fitting to fight Goliath? Saul, right? And not only because he was tall, but also he was what? The king, who was supposed to represent his people, and especially what did they want their king to do for them? Yeah, lead them in battle. It's like, hey, here's your opportunity. The guy to lead you into battle, who's the tallest guy of all, like, yeah, he might only be like, I don't know, maybe 6 foot, I don't know how tall Saul is, but like, he's not going to stand against Goliath, but at least he's taller than most. And so, yeah, like, he's the best candidate, but does Saul do it? No. He's afraid, just like all the rest of Israelites. Okay, he's afraid. And so you know the story. Jesse sends David to go bring some supplies to his brothers on the front lines. And this indicates David's still pretty young if he wasn't kind of drafted as part of this battle and everything. But he comes bringing the supplies. And real quick, just kind of a funny side note here. Verse 22, what does he do when he arrives? When David arrives. Before that, in verse 22.
He greeted his brothers.
Before that. Earlier in verse 22. Yeah, left all this stuff in the baggage. When did we last see baggage mentioned? Saul hiding, right? And so you have this kind of picture, this kind of little, I feel like the narrator, like a little slip in here, where in contrast to Saul, who kind of hides in the baggage away and all that, you have David just kind of tosses stuff in the baggage and runs to the front lines, right? Like, he's there to like, I'm here, I'm going to go greet my brothers at the front lines, all that stuff, okay? And so as he's there, what happens? Goliath comes out and gives kind of his normal speech. And when David hears it, he's kind of like, well, I want to deal with this uncircumcised Philistine, like, and eventually these words reach Saul, and Saul summons him. And again, this conversation between David and Saul is so great. And you again see this contrast between the two of them. And so David starts out kind of boldly saying here, I love this verse 32, let no man's heart fail because of him, your servant will go and fight the Philistine. And what do you think Saul's maybe initial responses to this? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, come on, kid. Like, It just sounds like the words of a like very immature like teenager, right? Like you just have this teenager like, I got this, don't worry. Like, okay, kid. Like, let's don't get too crazy. But and like even Saul says that, like, you can't do this, you're just a youth, and Goliath has been a warrior since his youth. And so this guy's like this trained warrior, you can't do this. But then David goes on to explain. Kind of like when he's taking care of his sheep and all that, what has he done?
Killed lions and bears.
Yeah, he's like killed lions and bears and everything. And it's kind of, he's telling Saul, like, I've killed lions and bears, I'll be fine. Okay, that's cool, I guess. I don't know, that's pretty interesting. That's cool. But another kind of side note that's interesting here, like, not only is that like maybe like an impressive thing, but if you look at some like ancient Near Eastern texts around that time, the killing of lions was actually like considered like the sport of kings. Okay. It was like the sport of kings. And so especially like the Assyrian kings, they would boast of like, oh, I've killed this many lions. I've done this. Right. Like, and they like, that was kind of their thing of this is like what a king does. And so you have this kind of picture here where David, more than just like showing, oh yeah, that's a pretty impressive resume. Like I've killed some lions and stuff. But it's actually, he's kind of being pictured as a king. And so he's doing kingly things. And so he is royal material, is really what's happening here. And so it's kind of an interesting side note in here. But was that the main reason why David had confidence? Was it just like, yeah, I've killed lions and bears. Like, that's fine. Like, that's my confidence. I have a lot of practice and everything. Is that where his confidence was? Yeah, but it's in the Lord, right? He understood, like, just like the Lord delivered him from the bear and the lion, all that, he understood, like, the Lord would deliver him against this Philistine who has blasphemed the armies of the living God. That's what he kind of says. And so David is not confident in himself. He's confident in God. And so that's why he can speak so boldly. And again, you see that contrast between him and Saul. And so he is confident. He's like, I got God on my side. I'll be fine. And then, so that's where you have like Saul try to give him a bunch of armor, which doesn't work out. And so David's like, nah, I don't want that. And what's he choose as his weapon? What's he do? Yeah, gets his stones and a sling. Have you ever wondered like why David does that? Like why a stone and sling? Why not like, I don't know, a sword, staff, right? All this stuff. And you're like, well, strategic, like, I don't know. Some people try to make the argument that somehow that was like a huge advantage for him or something, but that's not what it is, right? But one of the major reasons that people bring is kind of connects back to something earlier in the Old Testament, because if you remember, Goliath has been doing what this whole time? Like David said, he's been blaspheming God, essentially. And if you look back according to the Mosaic law, like in Leviticus 24, what were you supposed to do with someone who blasphemed God? You're supposed to stone him. You're supposed to stone him. And so that's exactly what David is doing here. He's like, I'm going to go stone him. He's blaspheming God. Let's stone him. And if you remember what we were discussing when like Israel is demanding a king, we talked about even though Israel wanted their primary focus of a king to be someone who fought battles, what was the primary focus is to be an enforcer or an upholder of the law. And that's exactly what David is doing here. Right? This guy is blaspheming God. And according to the law, he is to be stoned. I'm going to go stone him, right? Like, step aside. And so he's acting like a king here. He's living that out, okay? He's living that out. And again, this is in stark contrast to Saul. And so that's what you see going on here. And so David goes out, kills Goliath, cuts off his head. And when the Philistines do see all this, what? They retreat, run away. Which they don't uphold their end of the bargain, right? Remember, they're supposed to just surrender. They don't. They run off and everything. But Israel pursues them, defeats them, and all that. Okay? All right. And then you have kind of, I just make a small note here. You have that interaction between David and Saul here at the end of chapter 17, where it seems kind of strange, where at first it doesn't seem like maybe Saul remembers who he is. We're like, wait, didn't he love him and all that, right? But it seems like the idea of when he's asking like whose son he is probably more to find out more of like his background and so that he could like request David to like be like a lifelong subject, because that's what we see later on, like in chapter 18, says Saul took him in that day, would not let him return to his father's house. And so he's probably just wanting to know this, because even though he kind of found out about David's father in the previous chapter, if you think of kings back then, would they really remember all of their subjects, like fathers and stuff? No, they wouldn't view them as that significant. And so, yeah, that's why he's kind of asking all this again. Okay, so that's kind of how you can make those chapters work together. Okay. All right. And so then in chapter 18, you see the beginning here, Jonathan's response. So as soon as all this kind of happens, you have the response of Jonathan, Saul's son, to all this. And if you think about it, Jonathan is in line for the throne. And when he witnesses all this kind of go down with David and Goliath and everything, what do you think Jonathan would be tempted to view David as? Yeah, like a rival, like a threat to the throne. Like, this guy's going to get in the way. I'm supposed to take the throne. But is that how Jonathan responds? No, he doesn't. He actually develops a close friendship with David. He loves him. And even just this brief interaction right at the beginning is amazing here. Because notice verse 3, he makes a covenant with David. It says because he loved him as his own soul. And normally when a covenant is made between like two people, it's not normally made between like two equals. It's normally made between a superior and an inferior. And so probably what is likely going on here is that Jonathan recognizes that David is what? The superior. I'm the inferior. Like, this is the guy. This is the rightful king. And so I'm making this covenant with him. And that seems to be supported by verse 4. Where it says, and Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David. So he's giving, like taking off his royal robes, giving it to David as this sign of it's not Jonathan who's to take the throne, it's David. He is the true king. He is the rightful king. And this is kind of what we talked about. This is how Saul should have responded as well. When he understood, like, hey, your kingdom has been taken from you. You've been rejected as king. This is almost how he should have responded to this too. Like, here, David, like, here's the throne. But as we talked about, he doesn't do that. And again, you see that contrast between Jonathan and Saul continue. Okay, and so Jonathan here is just showing his complete allegiance to David. Okay, complete allegiance to David. And you see that continue, okay? But then in contrast, again, to Jonathan who shows his allegiance, next section we hear is we see Saul's jealousy of David. Where Saul does not show allegiance to David. He instead just gets very jealous. And the more and more popular David gets, the more and more jealous Saul gets and everything. And this leads to him even trying to kill David. And so this is the first of many that we'll see attempts. And this is one of the times where David's playing his lyre and all that. And Saul says he thinks in his mind, I want to pin him to the wall, right? Like, and so... which if you're trying to pin someone to the wall, like, you're probably throwing pretty hard, right? Which probably explains why you miss. Okay. Because you think of the harder you throw, it tends to be less accurate and all that, but David eludes all that. And so, God spares him in that way. And so despite all that, the Lord continues to give David success wherever he went, and God is continuing to prepare David as king. And then the end of chapter 18, we see David marries Michal, which is one of Saul's daughters, Saul's daughter. And you might be tempted to think, well, that's strange. Like, you're trying to keep this guy from getting to the throne and you're letting him marry like your daughter. Isn't that kind of like getting him more in kind of the royal area and all that? But we see kind of Saul's plan, if you remember, is... do you remember what he asked for, like, the bride price? He knows David can't afford it. He's kind of poor and all that, right? And so David even understands, like, I can't give a price for a bride, like, for the king's daughter, all that. But do you remember what Saul, and he's like, don't worry about it. I'll cut you some slack. This is what I want instead. Do you remember what he wants? Yeah, the 100 foreskins of the Philistines. All right, essentially he wants him to go and kill 100 Philistines. And what's Saul's plan? What's his hope? Yeah, that he's in his mind probably like, this is a suicide mission. Like, yeah, go kill 100 Philistines, David. And he's like, well, the Philistines will kill him and my hands are clean, right? Like, I'm good. But what happens? Do they kill him? No. In fact, he kills 200 Philistines. He doubles the asking price and just almost like humiliates him even more. He's like, I got you double. Here you go. Right? And so David ends up marrying Michal, and all this caused Saul to be even more fearful and more jealous of David. And even the text states like that Saul was David's enemy continually. So we see that it's just this process now. And then you see that even in chapter 19 with some further attempts of Saul to kill David. And you see Saul's efforts becoming increasingly more blatant in what he's doing. You can kind of think on this point, it's kind of like, oh, he's trying to kind of hide what he's doing. But in this chapter, it becomes very clear what he's doing. He's not hiding this. He's not being subtle at all. And in fact, in this chapter alone, he tries to kill David 4 times. So it's he's trying. And so the first time he tells his servants and Jonathan that, like, hey, you should go kill David. But knowing Jonathan, is that going to sit well with him? No. And so he intercedes kind of on David's behalf, talks with Saul, and he is able to convince him to not kill David and everything. And so Saul listens to him, and David is brought back into his presence like before. But this doesn't seem to last very long, because then you have another account of while David's playing his instrument, like Saul tries to pin him to the wall again, misses again, eludes him, that fails. Then you have a third time where Saul sends messengers to watch David in the night so that he can come and kill him in the morning. But then this time you have Saul's daughter, Michal, David's wife, is the one who intervenes and helps David. She warns him, and they kind of lower him out the window at night, and he escapes, and they put like a image thing in their bed and to make it, oh, he's sick in bed, right? And they find it's not David, but he escaped already, so she helps. And then last time, David flees to Samuel, and you would kind of think Saul wouldn't try anything with Samuel, right? Like, you would think with all that's gone on with him and Samuel over the years, all that, that he would kind of, like, oh, he's with Samuel, okay, he's kind of off limits at this moment. But no, he sends messengers to try to take David from him and everything, but they all fail. And even Saul goes up to try to get David and says, like, and he fell down prophesying and stripped off all his clothes naked, and yeah. Didn't end well for him. So he fails in that. And so you really can't miss what's going on here, though. Because Saul is trying so hard to kill David and preserve his dynasty. But even his own son, his own daughter, Samuel, the prophet of Israel, are all against him. And ultimately, who is against him? God. God is against him. He's never going to succeed, but he keeps trying. Okay, he keeps trying. And then we see chapter 20, kind of another pivotal moment in this book here, where so far, as Saul has tried to kill David, David's kind of remained around. Okay, he's kind of remained around. But things are intensifying so much that after the events of this chapter, David is going to flee and really kind of begin his time being on the run, is kind of what's going to happen. And to put this in perspective, David will be on the run for approximately like 10 years. Okay, 10 years. And that's a lengthy time. And if you just kind of put yourself in David's shoes for a moment, where you were just anointed as the king of Israel, you've done all these things, like had successes of just helping King Saul, all this, like having all these victories, all these things. But now you're going to be stuck on the run for like 10 years. Okay? I'm sure this is not what he expected. He's like, I got anointed. Cool. This is awesome. And then now I'm on the run for like 10 years. And we'll talk about this more next time. But really, as we've mentioned before, God is going to use this time to further prepare David for kingship by refining him to be the right king. So we're going to see, like, David's not perfect. He has areas he needs to grow in. He needs to be refined in. And that's what God is going to do during this time that he's on the run, is he's going to refine him. He's going to grow him. And that's what we start to see. And so chapter 20, though, is this pivotal moment where we see this kind of switch. And so this kind of starts out with David asking Jonathan, like, why is your dad trying to kill me? Like, what have I done? Like, please tell me, like, what I've done, if I've deserved this, all that. And John says, you haven't deserved any of this. But Jonathan also tries to say, like, well, I think you're going to be fine because he doesn't do anything without telling me first. But David recognizes, well, Saul knows that you like me, right? Like, you're my friend. And so he's probably going to hide things from you. And he still wants to kill me. And so Jonathan's like, I don't know if he really does, which is kind of funny. You're like, really? You don't know if he wants to kill him after all this? It's pretty clear. He's been so subtle about it. So they developed this plan of kind of this test to see if Saul does in fact want to kill David and all that. And so they do this test. They determine that, yes, he does in fact want to kill him and everything. But what's interesting is, in this moment, like, Saul gets so angry at, like, even Jonathan in moments, he actually tries to kill Jonathan too, right? He has his handy spear and tries to pin him also, and misses and all that. But you can't miss Jonathan's allegiance here. That not only is he willing to surrender the throne to David, he's willing to die in order to help and protect David. Because he understands, like, he understands this is the right king. This is the guy who's deserving of the throne. And that's amazing. That's amazing here that he understands this. And so Jonathan goes out, tells David the results of their test, and they both know, like, okay, David, you need to flee. You need to go. And so they reaffirm kind of this promise that David will show kindness to, like, Jonathan's offspring. He won't just wipe out his offspring when he gets to the throne and all that. And they part ways. So Jonathan returns back to the city. David goes kind of to be on the run, right? And that begins that time. And so again, we'll see that God will use that. He'll refine him during this time, and we'll see that refining taking place next time. All right? So we'll kind of wrap up there, and then we'll pick up in chapter 21 next week.